What up, what up, what up, what up, though? This is Nathan J. Shaw Jr., and you are listening to Fit for Life on 98.5 FM The Wire, presented by Frontline Sports Center and sponsored by Amerigroup. We are so excited about being on the radio yet again. This is the Fit for Life. We talk about entrepreneurship, we talk about sports, we talk about health and wellness, and we're unashamed and unapologetic to talk about our faith. As you can see, my voice is still recovering from an amazing summer camp that we took about 50 students to Branson, Missouri, and we went on a Christian sports camp, and they have all these cheers, and they take every single sport that there is, archery, basketball, football, tubing, anything that you can imagine, and they institute the word of God in it. And so if it's talking about archery, it's talking about hitting the mark. If it's talking about basketball, maybe defending against the temptation. So it's amazing camp. But as you can see, it did some effects to my voice, and so you're hearing the little Barry White in me right now. But we're so excited to be here. We have an amazing topic. I want you to tell everybody that you know, tell your mom, tell your grandpa, tell your best friend, tell your enemy, tell anybody that you know that they need to listen in on the radio today, because we have an incredibly important topic that I believe everybody needs to be a part of. As always, you can give us a call at 407-369-8555. Again, that's 407-369-8555. I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. Today, we're going to be talking about mental health as it relates to dealing with suicide. It's an epidemic in our communities. It's an epidemic in our countries. And mental health in itself is just an important topic that we've got to be aware of. We've got to talk about. We can't just sweep under the rug. Many times we look at different situations that may happen, whether it be with shooters, or whether it be, you know, in the homeless community, or whether it be wherever in our communities, and we're almost oblivious, like it's happening over there. No, it's happening in our own backyard, and we've got to be equipped and understand not only what we're dealing with, but how we deal with it. And so we have an opportunity today to hear from some people that have actually gone through this, and so I'm so excited about that. But before I do that, I want to make sure that we give an update for the Fit for Life Summer Boot Camp, because it has been absolutely phenomenal. We're actually on a rest week because it's the 4th of July weekend. First of all, shout out to all the people, 4th of July weekend. Hope that you are having some safe, amazing, wonderful fun. Hopefully you're having some time with your family and friends, and you have an incredible Wednesday, 4th of July weekend. But at the Fit for Life Boot Camp, we've been able to see transformation in the students, truly in mind, body, and soul. We started with a week of personal development, and we really made sure that the students looked into themselves. Many times we don't look within ourselves. We don't look within some of the issues that we're dealing with. We try to, again, sweep it under the rug, and we were able to bring that to the light, and some of these young people truly got some breakthroughs in understanding who they are, and not only who they are, but what I like to say, whose they are. Again, we talk about faith. We're unashamed to talk about the Spirit of God on this radio broadcast, because we want to be a light. And some of the young people got to be connected with whose they are. And then we did some personal development. We talked about vision boarding. And a lot of times we talk about vision boards as far as what you want for the future. But I firmly believe that you don't know where you're going in the future until you understand where you've been in your past. And so we actually had them do past boards. We had them do present boards. And we had them do vision boards so they could really see the totality of where they are. And I'm telling you, we had some amazing transformations. I want to give a big shout out to our directors and our leaders there. Sonia True kind of started us off. She has an amazing organization, and she also does her own tea. So a big shout out to Sips Tea. And then we had Pastor Larry Curry, and he came and really brought a real spiritual foundation where the kids were able to grow. Listen, some of these kids, and it goes to the topic that we're talking about, because we had a kid, we had a student. And I have a special studio audience that I'm gonna introduce in just a moment. But we had a student that said to us that he had never heard anything good about himself. And I mean, I think that's, when you think about this, the student was 13 years old, a bright kid, had some family issues, but had never heard anything good about himself. And so we had a situation where each kid had to do a positive affirmation for everybody in the room. We had about 30 kids, and to see those notes of kids that were giving positive affirmation really touched him, because he had never heard anything good about himself. And so we might be dealing with mental health, we might be dealing with depression, we might be dealing with all these different situations and not even realize it, but this is what he experienced. And then we went into Financial Literacy Week. Big shout out to Laura Dorsey and Pastor Larry Curry, who talked to the kids about saving and talked to the kids about credit cards and talked to the kids about managing money and talked to the kids about investing. We had, and I'm going to give a big shout out to Julian Wiggins and Jonathan Wiggins. We're on a track of understanding how to invest our money properly. And he actually, 22 years old, 17 years old, came and spoke with the kids about how to invest in currency and how to really create a financial legacy for themselves and middle school, high school. And so they got an intense financial literacy week. And then we just got done with a So You Think You Can Start a Business. And so that was really cool because the kids got into groups and they actually developed their own business plans. They got 9 chapters of a curriculum called Young Biblical Entrepreneurship. It's a part of the Nehemiah Project. And then they actually developed their own business plan. Now, this was a business plan that had to include a marketing analysis, an industry analysis. It had to include profit and loss statements. It had to include how they were going to benefit their community, how they were going to sustain a succession plan. I mean, it was pretty remarkable. And we had 3 winners, but we actually gave something to all of them. The top winning team got $600. The second place team got $250. And then the other 2 place teams got $125. And so it was just an amazing, amazing, amazing experience to have these kids really identify who they are, identify whose they are, understand their financial responsibility, and then jump into a business plan competition. I mean, listen, this is something never been done. But I didn't even talk about the sports training that they're getting, because they're also getting impacted in every sport you can imagine. I'm talking about soccer, volleyball, basketball, swimming, speed and agility. We just had Lo Wood on the show last week, and we're seeing body transformations. We had a young man that came in who was a little bit heavy, couldn't fit in his clothes, and he's slimmed down. He is seeing transformation, and so this is working. Big shout out to Frontline Outreach Youth Empowerment Project. A big shout out, and we actually have on in the studio, I'm going to put her on the spot right now, our Yep assistant, Miss Jennifer Henry, because we've just been talking about the Fit for Life Boot Camp. Yes. And I wanted to just tell the people, what is this boot camp? I see I'm putting her on the spot, y'all. Listen, I'm so putting her on the spot right now. Like she just, but tell the people what it's been like just being a part of something so remarkable.
It has been life changing as a camp leader, and just being behind the scenes, just seeing all the kids come in and ready to be a part of the camp, to learn what we are providing, to open up and really heal whatever is going on inside, so that when they go home, they're taking what the lessons that they learn here and they're taking it home. So when they're learning about themselves and being honest and being open with their emotions, you can see the change from when they were first coming in. You know, these kids come in with this confidence, like, yeah, I'm cool, yeah, I'm black, I'm a queen. And then as we go deeper, and they're like, oh, I have this insecurity, oh, this is just a cover up, but now I can really say I'm proud to be who I am, because now I know with my flaws and with my shortcomings I can still be great. And with being part of the camp, it shows that you are great and you have a team that is here to be great with you. You know, we're all pushing forward to the next level, and the kids are really being pushed. You can tell they're just like, I ain't here for it, but they don't leave, and they come back tomorrow ready to receive what we're giving them. It's so life-changing, just, and not just the building part, you know, mentally and spiritually, but the financial literacy part. They're just like, okay, I'm ready to invest multiple incomes. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to work that much, but I can still make more money, you know, than my parents, than their parents, and their parents, because these kids, they really want to change that cycle. And they want to get out of this rut, you know, right, that is around them, and get out, not just get out of the community, but to change the community. Mm-hmm. And you can see as their minds are being transformed, they're ready to transform to the next level.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not keeping her hidden, but we got an incredible guest that's in the building right now. I promise you I'm going to introduce her in just a moment. But I want to go right quickly to our radio engineer that's in the building right now, because she's just such a powerful voice and a powerful representation of a young, independent African-American woman who just graduated high school and is already in her field of desired, And so when we talk about that transformational factor, and we talk about, you know, impacting mind, body, and soul, why is it so important to you to be involved in the community, to be a light in the community, and actually take that next step?
It's important to me to be a part of my community, because I remember a time when I wasn't involved and I wasn't a part of the community, and to see the impact that it had on me, because I wasn't involved. I didn't have a support system. So that caused me to be everywhere. Like, I was getting into fights. I was battling depression. I was even battling suicide. So for you guys to even bring up that topic is really big for me, because I literally overcame suicide probably a year ago when I joined Live Church Orlando. So it's like, for me, it's about making a pathway for people that's coming after me, because I know that in high school I've seen a lot of people battle with depression. A lot of people hate their skin. A lot of people hate their community because they weren't really involved. They didn't know what their community was about. They didn't even know truly who they were as a person. So for me, it's about creating a platform where my peers and people that look like me get an opportunity to feel that they're great and they can accomplish anything. So if that's putting me in a place where I have to be the example, I'd rather be the example and they can follow me rather than follow the streets.
Phenomenal. And we're just so excited to be here to be able to talk about, again, a very, very important topic. So I want you to make sure you tell everybody you know we're right here on 98.5 FM The Wire. This is the Fit for Life radio broadcast, and we are presented by Frontlines Outreach and Sports Center, and sponsored by Simply Healthcare Plans. And we're going to dive into a topic right now. We're going to dive into something that's very important. I didn't want to take a lot of time. I know we got sports out there. We know LeBron going to the Lakers. We know.
First of all,
we didn't need all of that. That was not. What? See, we asked you to communicate about impacting the community. We asked you to communicate about LeBron James going to the Lakers. So that
I didn't know about that.
Yes, LeBron is going to the Lakers. Okay, so we're going to give you a little bit of sports update, because I was looking at it yesterday. Let's just catch up, right? All right, so big moves. Paul George is staying with OKC Thunder, 4-year deal. Chris Paul is staying with Houston Rockets, 4-year deal, $160 million. DeAndre Jordan is going to the Dallas Mavericks.
Wow.
A couple of Orlando Magic news, because you know we do have to rep for O Town.
Nah, it's just you.
First of all, what we not gonna do is be in Orlando and be disrespecting Orlando Magic. So Orlando Magic, okay, we did lose Mario Hezonja to the Knicks. Okay, that happened. Elfrid Payton is going somewhere. Yes, but we signed Aaron Gordon to a 4-year deal, $84 million. So shout out to Aaron Gordon. He actually has practiced at Frontline Outreach before. So shout out to him. We got him for another 4 years. But the big news on the market is that LeBron James is going to the Los Angeles Laker for 4 years, $157 million.
That's four rings. Wow, four rings back to back.
You sound like Miami. Not one, not two, not three, not four that you will win, because he's not going to win. But anyway, so Kawhi is still out there. Decision. We're not sure what Kawhi is going to do. But that's just your sports update for the moment. Many, many, many other moves, and I think the landscape is going to shape. One of the things they did say is that the Eastern Conference has been stripped so much, and the Western Conference has grown so much, that they're almost talking about trying to, well, people want them to change the playoff bracket, that it's just the best top 16 teams instead of Eastern and Western Conference, because it's kind of phenomenal. I mean, you know, in the Eastern Conference, you're talking about maybe Boston, Philly, Toronto won 59
Boston?
Games. I mean,
they haven't won a championship in like 30 years.
Okay, so. well, LA Lakers haven't won a championship.
Yeah,
in a
but guess
some
who's on the Lakers team now?
Honestly, so we have a bona fide LA resident in Orlando right now. I guess she's on vacation.
No,
she's on vacation. I guess because we're in her old town.
I'm not a Laker fan. I'm a LeBron fan. So if LeBron could have went to the Boston Celtics, whatever he decided to go, I would have bandwagoned the whole team because LeBron is on that team.
I don't have the time because we have an important topic to talk.
But
I can't stand these LeBron bandwagon fans. Like the Bible say, be steadfast, yes. unmovable. That's what it says.
Always abounding.
You know, and you just got these people that just swish and wash and all with the wind. Anyway, we got to talk about. So that's your little sports update. We have some entrepreneurs in the building because we do talk about entrepreneurship. And so I just want to, without further ado, first, well, what we do this, we got to station identification. So, right after the break, we're going to introduce our amazing, amazing guest. One is not a guest. It's actually one of our hosts. The other is an amazing guest. So, we're going to introduce them right after the break. You are listening to the Fit for Life radio broadcast right here on 98.5 FM The Wire, presented by Frontline Sports Center and sponsored by Amerigroup. We will be right back after these messages.
Yo, are you a legend?
Yeah, I'm a legend. Oh my God, oh my God. If I die, I'm a legend.
Wait, wait. Not that kind of legend. A legend from Legends Academy.
What's Legends Academy?
Legends is a K-8 STEM-focused school that prepares leaders for tomorrow.
Leaders like me?
Yeah, anybody can be a leader. And there are a lot of young leaders out there like us that need a place to prepare.
Then tell them to come out.
If you are a young leader, come out and register at Legends Academy, located at the Hope Center West Campus in the Washington Soares community of Orlando, Florida. School hours are from 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Be there.
Well, I'm going to slide out there right now.
Yo, my name is Mark.
And this is Laura.
And we are part of the Youth Empowerment Project. YUP is a nonprofit organization that looks to expose students to many opportunities.
We also look to equip students with information and empower youth and young adults to success through professional development.
Some opportunities are field trips and guest speakers.
We learn design, video, social media, and web design.
We also make money from paid internships in our LifePrint store.
You can learn more at www.youthep.org. Join us at Frontline Outreach, 3000 CR Smith Street, Orlando, Florida, 32805, second floor.
This is a place where your voice is heard.
Remember, equip, expose, and empower.
What's up? This your man Larry with some info about Frontline Outreach Sports Center. This place has lit programs like Friday night open gym, basketball training, and more. Our mission is to serve and support you and the families through programs in early childhood education, character development, athletics, health and wellness, and family empowerment. We are located at 3000 CR Smith Street, Orlando, Florida, 32805. Be there.
LifePrint Enterprises is here for your multimedia needs in video production, graphic design, photography, web, publication, and so much more. We not only provide the best in production, but we also give back by providing internships to youth and young adults. When you book us, you're helping our next generation. Leave a lasting print by contacting LifePrint today at www.thelifeprint.com. That's www.thelifeprint.com. Put a stamp on it.
Hey, that was riding for a bit. No chill. Yes, I love it. So just a big shout out to all of the different young people that participated on the commercials. Our Youth Empowerment Project students were able to participate in creating commercials for the radio, another internship opportunity we have. And of course, that's through LifePrint that we can do that. So without further ado, I am here to introduce my co-host for the day, and I hope this is just a continual thing.
Oh, look at
but
you.
This is this. I mean, a veteran in the game at this point. This is show three.
Yes, it is
show three that we've had the incomparable, the amazing Miss Shelly Fanfan, who is the co-owner of Mental Health and Behavioral Services.
Yes,
and she just a phenomenal mind. I can't say enough about how much she has been an impact in the community. I have seen her work firsthand as it relates to dealing with specifically young people with problems, and it's just second to absolutely none the impact that she makes on the lives of people because of the knowledge. We got to have knowledge, people. It's not just about talking about what we feel, but we got to have the knowledge behind it. So I just want to say thank you so much for being the co-host today, and thank you for being on the Fifth Light broadcast. How are you feeling?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. And I don't know if you want to introduce our guest.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I am the co-owner of Harmony Mental Health and Behavioral Services. He just gave me a credit for owning all mental health and behavioral services in the world. Harmony is the one. And, you know, I do feel great because anytime I am able to just expose ignorance or expose those topics that most of us are ignorant about, it is definitely a blessing. I am operating in what I'm purposed to do. I'm operating in my strength. Therefore, I am well. Yes. I am empowered, and yes. I am strong. Yes. Find your lane.
Yes.
Find your lane and flow in whatever that lane is, and you will always be well. So
absolutely.
I'm excited about today. So he called me his co-host. Oh, my God. I love the promotion.
Yes.
But today we have an amazing guest. Her name is none other than the Christina Buell. Most of you know her as the Money Lady. Yes. Money Lady. She is an amazing financial advisor. She is so anointed in bringing your penny to millions. Your penny to millions.
I heard it.
Hallelujah.
I heard it.
And she's just an anointed woman of God. She's an amazing entrepreneur. She is a coach for CEO Chicks. It's a network here in Orlando. She is a mom. She is a, oh my gosh, everything, all of the above. And she does everything with so much excellence. And so I have an amazing opportunity to know this woman. This is Christina Buell. Say hi to Orlando.
Hello, Orlando.
We're so, so excited to have you. So tell us a little bit about what you do, and we'll take it from there.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, Shelly and Nathan, thank you so much for having me on today. Absolutely. This is such an important topic that I definitely know we need to discuss. For those of you who don't know me or have not heard about me, I am an entrepreneur in Orlando area. I have a license in over 23 states, but it's not just that I do. I love what I do. I know that's what God has called me to do. I deal with money every day, so I enjoy that part of me, but that's not all I do, right? Mm. That's not what I was focused and born to do. And so I'm glad that she said I'm a mom. That's first and foremost in my household. That's what's most my top priority. In addition to that, I have an amazing family, and we've adopted in our family many children. And so I've become, you know, a big sister to all of them. Wow. So there's roughly 12 of us total.
Wow.
And so I'm constantly interacting with youth, and I love what you're doing with the camp. I think that's amazing. But I'm really let's just kind of dive in. I really want to talk about and get into this subject today, because I know people see me on the streets, they see me all put together, you know, see me driving around in a nice car, nice house, all those sort of things. But there was definitely a time when I was broken.
Mm.
And I think sometimes people see the outside and they forget that what we had to go through to get to this point.
Oh my God.
And so I know God is, you know, telling me today, it is not just about what everybody looks like on the outside. Everything can look great on the outside, but sometimes on the inside, people are just being tore down.
Mm.
It breaks my heart. 13-year-old never ever had anybody give him a compliment or give him something positive.
Heard
I heard that in the beginning. Those are the things that we need to be focused on as a people, because we need to uplift our children and really grow from there. So I know we're going to get into it, but you know, I lost my son when he was 13 years old to suicide.
Mm.
So I know the pain that is at that point, and I know the struggle I had to go through just to get over that myself. I want to let Sally ask questions first, because I could just go straight into my story. let me let her ask some questions, and then I'll dive in a little deeper.
And I want to right quick just to make sure that our goal with this show is to expose what's happened, but also go toward healing.
Yes.
Because a lot of times we sit in the issue of what happened and we don't shift toward healing. So this is a potential for your healing. We want you to call in 407-369-8555. I know it's a difficult subject, but maybe you can gain healing from this show.
Yes.
So if you desire to ask questions, someone who's been through it, and Shelly's going to actually lead the way, but 407-369-8555, come and get your healing as it relates to mental health, how to deal with suicide. Such an amazing, amazing, important topic.
All right. Well, you were on a flow, and you were in your flow. And so you are the mother of three.
Yes.
Two of which are living.
Correct.
When you hear that, how does that feel to
That's
just
hard.
To hear that?
It's hard to hear. Let me say this. It is. I always say I'm the mother of three. I never, ever forget that there was a third child. And so when you hear somebody saying, you know, oh, you know, I only see two children, or where's your other son? I mean, I get that question all the time, because I have pictures up in my office and people knew us.
Mm.
And so I get that question often. And honestly, sometimes it's gut-wrenching. The first thing you want to say is, he's fine.
Mm.
You know, that's the first thing, that my first auto response. But I will tell you, it took me a while to say, you know, my other two children are doing wonderful. Versace, he died from suicide. You know, now it's been 6 years ago now. I couldn't even say the word when it first happened. It took me almost 2 years to say the word suicide.
Wow.
Out loud, because that's the deepness of the pain. And there's such a, it's almost like there's this thing when you say the word suicide, like it is your fault.
Hmm.
Automatically. And it took me a while just to get past that part. It wasn't my fault. You know, let me go into my story.
Can you dive into that a little bit? Because
yes.
I think we have some listeners that may have gone through that.
Absolutely.
And you immediately look, because I've heard two different sides, and I don't want to take away from your story.
Sure.
But I've heard the side of blame, guilt, shame. And I've also heard the side of anger.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay, yeah. So one angle, what did I do wrong? Why did I not see the signs? Why did I not? And I'm sure there's a range of emotions there. But then I've heard the other side. I've talked with someone very close to me recently. And they were like, I'm upset. Why would they do this to us? Why would they do this to our family? So how was that for you? You can kind of shift into your schedule
Absolutely. So let me tell you the story a little bit. Of course, for my children, we actually adopted all three of our children. Basically, a little under a year and a half of the adoption, the oldest one of the sibling group committed suicide. And he was 13. We adopted him when he was 11. And so here's what I say to that. So after the suicide, first of all, that is a day that is etched in my brain. I know every detail about that day. Like literally from the moment it happened. They tell you that there's defining moments in your life where you won't forget something. I can tell you what he was wearing. I can tell you what I was wearing. I can tell you the smell. I can tell you, you know, how I found him, what it looked like. I mean, literally every detail. And so I know for me, that is always etched in my brain. For me, that healing process, what happened for me right after, I completely shut down. But once I started to kind of get up and get back into my daily, everyday routine, and we'll go through that in a second, you do get those feelings of blame. You know, you blame yourself. You go through every emotion I can think possible, but they talk about the five steps of grieving. I had all five. But I will tell you the one I stuck on the most was anger. Anger stuck with me for a long time. And I wasn't angry, let me say, at him per se. Let me rephrase that. I will say I was angry at him in the sense of, my goodness, how could you do this to us? We were trying to love you and care about you. But I realized it wasn't just, he didn't look at it as just us. He had a whole 11-year history of pain before he got to us. So I look at that and I was angry about that. But I was more angry with myself for saying, why didn't I catch it? What did I miss?
Right.
How did I not get to this child quick enough? What did I not say to him? Did I not tell him I love him enough? Did I not, you know, do enough for him? Those were all the things that I talked or thought to myself when I was going through that. But the anger stuck with me for a long time, and it took my children, the two other children, to tell me, you just seem so much more angrier now. Before I even got it.
Wow.
I couldn't even see that for myself. I mean, I was just shut down. I was short with everybody. It wasn't like I was belligerently being crazy. Don't get me wrong. But they just saw there was a complete difference, a complete shift in who I was. And they had to tell me. We went through counseling, and the counseling was a hard part. I'm going to talk about that in our community because we don't seek counseling. We just think we got it. We'll just go back to regular everyday life. Well, I tried to do that, and it almost broke me. And so I will tell anybody, when you're going through any struggle, suicide is a major thing, but when you're going through any struggle, go get help. Help is so important. And for me, who tried to go back to my everyday life, I was working, I was in ministry, I just tried to flow like, okay, I'll just get past this too. Because I was the rock in my family. Anybody ever been the rock? Right?
Yes.
The one that's always taking care of everything and in control of everything, right? I was that rock. So to first have to release that part. But then realizing that, okay, I'm going to counseling, and then I really wasn't doing the counseling. You know, Shelly was my counselor, she knows. But I really wasn't doing the counseling in the beginning. I was just going through the motions because everybody said I needed counseling, right? And probably 6 months after, I had really just a complete meltdown. Just complete breakdown altogether. Once I got past, you know, once I realized, okay, I really do have to do the work. I cut my work in half. I, you know, took some time off with the kids, different things like that. But I really started to dig into, you know, the pain that I was feeling. And I had never had that pain before. The one thing I will say for me, I didn't have a bad childhood. I didn't have a lot of hurt or pain in my past. This for me was the most painful situation I had ever been in. And so to go at that point in my life, I was 33, 34 years old, to go 33, 34 years old with almost a life that people, you know, envy, that they love, and then to be like, you know, bam, in 2 seconds, everything shifted
now,
and changed.
Now, Shelly, I want to ask, because you brought something up, Christina, about the five stages of grieving. And I think it's important that we might identify that, because there may be people listening that may be in the middle of one of them and they have no clue. Let there be light. And they have no clue that they're in the midst of grieving, you know, and grieving could be more than just losing a child. It could be losing a loved one. It could be losing a job. It could be, you know, it's kids doing things you don't want them to do, strung out on drugs, whatever that loss is. Can you talk about some of those stages of grieving and Christina talked about immediately getting to counseling. What happens for that person who may not get into counseling and the effects of that?
Okay. Wow, that is a loaded question. So the stages of grieving, it doesn't happen chronologically. It happens in a different order for different people. And some people go, they vacillate between stages and go back and forth. And so, the first stage, and I hate to say first, second, cause you know, then people automatically seem as chronological. Okay. So denial is the first one. And, a lot of people just tend to feel like they can just kind of jump back into their daily lives, or, they get thrown into like, I'm focusing on the funeral and the wake and making sure everybody's okay. And the insurance policy. And now we got to sell the house. And when it's not the house, it's family conflict. And we're dealing with family conflict. And the next, you know, 1 year has passed.
Wow.
And you still haven't dealt with it. And then it's, you know, just constantly being in a state of unawareness, not really dealing with it, not really sitting in the emotions. So that's denial. The next one, another stage is anger, you know, just really being angry. You become angry at yourself. You become angry at other people. You become angry at the person who has passed. Mm. And in this particular case, we're talking about suicide. So the person who died by suicide, and you start to wonder, why did they do this to me? And you think that it was something that was done out of revenge. And just anger, irritable, not being able to connect with other people. So that's another stage. Another one is bargaining, where you start to think to yourself, like, you know, if I could, it's your woulda, coulda, shoulda stage. The woulda, coulda, shoulda. And that really causes a lot of self-condemnation, that really, really causes further injury in addition to the grieving and the bereavement process. Let's see. Then, of course, there is guilt. Okay, just really placing blame on yourself and feeling really down. And a lot of the time it's taking that anger and turning it inward. And so there's acceptance also. That's when you get to a place where you have accepted it, you are getting the help that you need, the emotions that you feel about it are healthy, they're not causing any level of dysfunction or minimal dysfunction. And so those are generally the different stages. And of course, you know, like I said, people can go from acceptance to, how did I get back into anger again? And from anger back to denial. And, you know, we have people who will say that I called the person today. I just totally forgot that this had happened and literally called the person. Wow. And when I heard his voice on the voicemail, remember that he was gone. That's just an example of that denial and how deep it can get.
So you mentioned, going through a year of denial per se and didn't realize it. So, I mean, it's possible for someone to have the incident happen at one point and it'd be a year later and they haven't fully grieved.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They haven't really. And so what was that like for you, Christine? I mean, how long do you think it took you? And it may be still a journey of that grieving to where you were able to get to a consistent level of acceptance.
I think, well, first of all, I'm going to say, I think this is different for every person. So for me, honestly, the whole process to get to acceptance was probably at least a 3-year process.
Wow.
And even today, there's still days when I battle it. His birthday's coming up this month. There's going to be a day where I battle it this month. I purposely plan vacations during that week, so I'm not at work and I'm not focused on other things, but I can take the time on that day to grieve for him. However that's going to look for me. But I will say, for every single person, it's going to be different. I personally thought I could just jump back into my life. Let me just start going back and doing things the way I was doing them and see if that happens. I have, you know, since this happened, we attended counseling groups and we, I blog with people that are in different mom groups online. I realize everybody grieves at different paces. And I realize for a lot of people, once somebody commits suicide, their entire life shuts down.
Wow.
A family member, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a children, the effect that that has on those people, they feel that for life. It never goes away. And so I will say, you know, we've heard of some major people nowadays in the news committing suicide. It is all about, we have to reach out and talk to each other and we have to communicate with each other, because, you know, had it not been, you know, Shelly went to church with me and I am so thankful for that, because honestly, I do remember one thing. She showed up the very next day. She was at my house. I was at my parents' house, actually. It was like an hour away, and she showed up there. But I'm thankful that she was there, and I had a good support system around me for people to say, hey, you need to get some help. You need to do things. Because the grieving process doesn't end. There's no back to normal. Let me say it that way. You're going to create a new normal. You're going to create a new life.
That's important. Right. That's important.
Yeah, it is very.
I wanted to say something also, because when we talked about the stages of grief, I know that when you Google it, you're going to see that it's five. And for those of you who know me as a therapist, I don't like those types of boundaries and parameters surrounding things, because that continues to promote ignorance, because then you start to think, which stage do I fall in? And there's only five. There's so many. Yes. And one of those stages is overcompensation. When you lose someone, then you become very fearful of losing other people. Mm. And so you may like really overextend yourself and want to be overly present and want to like call everybody. And then there's this overcompensation. And so I want you to talk about how you overcompensated and how that affected the parenting of your other two children. Yes. Having lost one.
Absolutely. So I definitely overcompensated with the children. And so here's what happened is that, so I lost one. And I started getting to a situation where instead of allowing them to kind of live their life, I wanted them to be around me all the time. I wanted to see them all the time. I wanted to make sure they weren't going to do the same thing, right? Because I started reading all these blogs about suicide and different stuff and how prevalent it is. If it happens in a family, it probably will happen again in the family. And I just, honestly, that was just the enemy. Let me just be honest. Mm. That was just the devil literally trying to soak into my mind that one of my other children were going to hurt themselves.
Wow.
And so I had to get to, part of, you know, the irritability and anger about my children is because I didn't let them go. They were with me all the time.
Wow.
The only time I let them go is when they went to school. I made sure I was home when they got home. I made sure I didn't leave the house until they left in the morning. I mean, there's so many things that I went through. I slept with the light on at night because I couldn't sleep in the dark at that time. That's changed since. But again, it took me a process. But for my children specifically, I wanted them to be around me all the time so I could protect them. Well, you can imagine, as any child, when you're a parent and your child, you're smothering your child, which is what I was clearly doing, you know, they wanted to like kind of rebel and back away from that. And I'm thinking, all I'm trying to do is love you and hold on to you and make sure that you're safe. And they're like, no, you're giving me way too much. Not to mention, again, my children were adopted, so they weren't used to being smothered. They were used to the complete opposite of people just like, leave me alone sort of thing. So when I get into the smothering mode, it almost backfired in the sense of now we have, you know, conflict between us. And we have a much better relationship today, and I'm thankful to God for that. But I had to, one of the things I'll say is you have to listen to your children. You really have to open our ears and really listen to what they're saying. They have feelings. They have a voice. We are not perfect as parents. We're not going to do everything right. My parents, I remember, allowed me to make a lot of mistakes growing up. I was trying to fix all their mistakes so they had no pain, right? You can't let a child not experience pain, right? Because if they don't know how to go through the process, and later in life, that's going to affect them. So we have to allow that. I had to allow them to talk about it. So for a while, we didn't talk about it. It was like taboo in the household. We knew it happened.
Now, was that because of them?
No, it was because of me.
Yeah.
Because every time we talked about it, I broke down. So I started crying. And so then they thought they were making me feel bad. So they didn't want to talk about it in front of me. And so so they stopped talking about it. And I realized that was not healthy either.
I think that's important because, you know, a lot of times, and again, I know we're talking about suicide, but there's different types of trauma. We talked about that on one show as well. And when any kid or family experience trauma, that's the kid, the child, the teenager, the young adult is experiencing that trauma too, and many times are not allowed to have that level of grief because of what maybe the adult is going through. And so how did you deal with that? How did they get to their, what were their stages of grief, and how did they get to their level, if they have, of acceptance?
Absolutely. So children are definitely resilient. They moved probably a lot faster than I moved in this process, which also was hard, I will say. But let me say that they definitely went through hurt. I definitely know, especially my daughter, definitely felt hurt and just pain from that. And so really what I will say is that for me, it was just important that they got counseling because they weren't talking to me about it. And so, you know, one of the things I always say, and this is for all of our children, they have to have an outlet. They have to have somebody to communicate with that they can get this information out. And it's got to be a safe zone, because sometimes as parents, we just try to fix it automatically because they're our child. And that's what I tried to do. You can't do that. You have to let them have an outlet somewhere they can communicate and talk. And you step back as a parent. You may not always know, and you have to let the child tell you in their own time.
Yeah. So I think it's really important that when we are exposing and we're bringing the truth out, that we try to be as specific as possible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, again, this is a really, really, really tough topic. But I'm going to ask you to talk about the days going into that day.
Yes.
When you walked in and had realized that he had taken his life. And so I want you to talk about a little bit about him.
Absolutely.
Who he was, his personality, some of the events that led up to it, and that ultimate moment.
Absolutely. So Versace is his name. Mm-hmm. And he, let me say, Versace was a leader in his sibling group. He always wanted to protect his brother and sister. From a young age, he was actually told, hey, you're responsible for your brother and sister. So he took that very seriously and took it to heart. So let's kind of go up to the summer before. So the summer before, I will say, leading up to his suicide, people always ask me, did you see signs? Did you see different things? Let me tell you, nothing can prepare you for that day. Mm. Nothing. But did I see signs? Looking back now, yes. He started to get reclusive. Mm. He started to get quiet. One day I came home and he had like a neck around like a mark around his neck. Now he told me it was because he was playing with a necklace and he was rubbing it on his neck. But later on, his siblings actually told me, no, it was from the chain hanging from his room, his ceiling fan. Okay. We had a gun in the house. That's how he committed suicide. Mm. And so, we locked up the gun, all those sort of things. The safe that we had the gun lock on, it was battery operated. The battery died. Mm. Sometime within that week or two, the battery had died, and he was able to gain access to the gun. He had pulled it out before. This was not his first time pulling it out. Again, he had talked to his siblings about this, but he had not talked to us about it. And so, again, all these things kind of came out after the fact, but I will say leading up to it, I definitely saw signs of him being reclusive and not wanting to interact so much with everybody. I was doing things to try to lift his spirits, I will say, because I could tell he was down. And so I was doing things like he wanted to go see an author that he really liked that had been through adoption and those sort of things. And we went to do that. And I went, we were actively involved in church. He was in church every Sunday, every Wednesday. Again, that doesn't, I want to say this heavily, just because people go to church right. every Sunday does not mean right. that they are 100% whole.
Come on.
They can be broken, broke down, busted, and disgusted. They can be that too, right? So we were around people all the time, but I could see the signs already of him, when I think back now, of him just kind of being quiet the whole time. He would talk to me about some things, but he was really not opening up. And he was adamant about, I don't really want to go to counseling. I don't really want to go to counseling. These are kids that went through foster care. Everybody that goes through foster care, you got to go through counseling, right? So he had done probably 5 years of counseling. My problem with that is he did 5 years of counseling with different counselors issued by the state, this, that, and everything else. He didn't have a set person that he had built a relationship with. And so I was adamant about that, especially with my other two children, that we find somebody that they can really be safe and secure with and build that relationship with. And so leading up to that day, that morning, so he was being, he was doing homeschool at the time. That morning he stayed home. He was 13 at the time. He wanted to stay home. I worked a mile from home. He wanted to kind of sleep in. He was going to go for a run, and then he wanted to sleep in. He was going to start his work. I said, no problem. So he went, I went for, went to work. I came back at lunchtime. We had lunch. We were planning a cruise. We had a whole discussion about the cruise and going to jet ski on the cruise. Nothing that day would have prepared me. His father, I went back to work. I said, I'll be back in about 2 hours. Dad came home around 1 o'clock. He was picking up the other siblings from school in order to, they had a doctor's appointment, an eye doctor's appointment. So he asked, their dad asked him, hey, do you want to ride with me? No, I want to stay home. Stayed home. And when I got home around 3 o'clock, I walked through the door. I you know, was calling his name, but I didn't hear anything. I could see him laying, and I'm looking at him like, hey, are you what are you looking for under the couch over there? And I walk over to him and realize he's laying in a pool of his own blood. And so I will tell you, again, that is a moment that would be etched in my mind forever. Mm. You will never be prepared for that. And I would think, you know, leading up to that beforehand, did I think, you know, he was struggling a little bit? Yes. Never did I think it was as bad as suicide. And that day I would have had no ideas. You know, in that time frame, just everything coming together. And I don't know what happened to the day. I don't know if he was, you know, I mean, one of the things I tell people all the time, one of my biggest regrets is that I allowed him to homeschool. Hmm. You know, because we talked about that. He was struggling in regular school. We kind of went back and forth. It's one of my regrets. Again, everybody has homeschooling differently and does different things. You know, a lot of times, most of the times he would come to my office with me. I run my own business. I'm an entrepreneur, so I had no problem with that. So he would come to my office with me sometimes. And school had just started. We were only in school maybe 10 days. And wow. This is his first 10 days of homeschool. But I think the reclusion was too much. He needed to be around other people. And that's just my thoughts in it. But I think sometimes, especially when you are depressed or suicidal, you will typically just completely shut yourself off to the world. And you need to be around other people, positive people that can help you, even if you don't know they're helping you. So, you know, that for me, leading up to that moment of finding him and then just being in utter shock. And truly, my body went through shock at that moment.
Mm. You know, I want to put this in perspective, because this is from American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And some of the stats on this is this is the 10th leading cause of death in America. 45,000 people per year die from suicide. And so for every suicide, there's been about 25 attempts, it says.
Mm.
And, you know, again, the age range, one of the things on here was the age range, less than 15, is dramatic, is almost at, I think it said 14-15%. So it's very common that you may be interacting over the course of a week,
yeah,
with someone who has either experienced it firsthand,
yes,
going through it, or maybe about to enter it. And so it's very important that we're aware of those signs. So she mentioned, Christina mentioned seeing the reclusiveness, seeing a change in their attitude, their behavior. When you see that, whether it be a student or youth, a kid or an adult, Shelly, what are the proper, what should you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the proper thing to do? Because a lot of times you don't want to be in their business, but how do we respond?
Well, one of the things that lately I have been teaching more on with my interns, these are individuals who are also in the process of getting licensed, is that don't sugarcoat the question.
Mm.
We say, do you have a desire to hurt yourself or hurt other people? These are things that we're trained to say. We need to expose it.
Mm.
Do you want to kill yourself?
Wow.
You know, have you ever thought of killing yourself? Have you ever had thoughts of what the world would be like without you? Have you ever thought about, if I was going to kill myself, this is the way that I would do it? We have to really be that direct when you have any type of suspicion or feeling that something is wrong. There are three things that those who die by suicide are successful in attaining. Three different things.
Mm.
The first thing that they're successful at is alienating themselves.
Mm.
That's the first A. And you have to understand that they can be around a group of people and still feel alienated.
Wow.
Still feel alone. The reason why we don't understand it is because with our sober mind, we're trying to make sense of a mind that has that is injured, a mind of an emotionally disturbed person, because it is emotional disturbance that causes this overwhelming desire to die.
Hmm.
It's emotional disturbance that allows the person to feel that there is more value in their death, wow, than in their life. Survival is innate.
Right.
Yeah.
We all have that innate, you know, that survival, this desire for survival, it's very innate. So to have emotional disturbance so much that it will overpower your will to live, that is your, that's our survival mechanism, is huge. And so again, three things that those who die by suicide are successful in doing. The first thing is alienation. And the second thing is access. So they have planned. You know, when people think that this was so impulsive, you know, this person must have, you know, been impulsive in doing so. No, they've planned it.
Yes.
They've planned it for a really long time, and they have battled for a long time to overcome the will to survive. Again, because it is a survival mechanism in us. It's in us. Just the way that you blink, you know, it's the same thing. And so so they have alienated themselves. They have successfully gained access to the plan, and they have successfully activated the plan.
Yes.
Those three things: alienation, access, and activation. So you talked about you know, Versace becoming reclusive. Isolation is very, very big. Sometimes they try to make amends and try to kind of bring closure to things before that they do it. Some people, when they finally get to a point where they have decided this is what I'm going to do, they have overcome the natural will to live. They have overcome that. They have found peace in that. They get better. So sometimes when we have someone who has been consistently depressed, consistently down, consistently dark, and all of a sudden they're talking more, they're wearing colors, and they feel like they're doing, or it appears as if they're doing better, it's because they have resigned themselves to taking their lives.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And that's another sign as well.
Wow, wow. So, I mean, we have, we never have enough time.
I know.
We're coming. So I want to give the last few moments. We literally have 7 minutes to you all. I want to start with you, Christina. You may just, if you could speak to anybody that may have either dealt with this situation or maybe in the middle of it, can you just speak into them for a moment?
I want to say, number one, you're not alone. There are millions of people across the world dealing with suicide, whether they want to take their life or whether you are a person who, somebody who has taken their life, you know, family member, sibling, whoever. So you are not alone. There is a community out there that is willing and able to help you. The other thing I want to say is that we are all believers. I know we talked about that in the beginning of this. You know, I would not have got through this without God. I say this a million times over. It is His peace that allows me to stand today and be happy, honestly. And I want to say that out loud because there is a moment where you will be happy again. In the beginning, I thought that day would never come. It just seemed like there was no happiness out there. But there will, that day will come, and I will tell you a million times over, there is hope. There is peace out there. There is joy out there again. Find God. Find God. If you have, you know, backslidden or been away from Him, find Him. He will help you get back to a peaceful place. And then lastly, I will say, whether you are dealing with suicide or you know somebody dealing with suicide, get help now.
Yeah.
Do not wait. You don't have another minute. You don't have another hour. You don't have another day. That is one thing for me. I thought, oh, you know, we can handle this. You know, he's a hurt child. And I mean, he was 13 at the time. I had, you know, never in my mind that I imagined a 13-year-old could commit suicide. But I realize now there's many 13-year-olds that have committed suicide and even younger. And so I will say this a million times over, go get help. If there is any, even if you just see signs of depression or just somebody really acting out of character, go with them and help them see somebody and talk to them, check up on them, call them. If this is your friend, your family member, your loved one, pick up the phone and ask them how they're doing. That is so important. And honestly, for me and my journey, this is a walk through life that I will have for every day. I mean, it will never, ever go away. I say that a million times over, but you can get through it. And I'm here as an example of an overcomer. This is not the story that defines me. It is the story that I will use to help other children, that I will use to help other adults, that I will use to help my community, that I will use to help even my own family. Because even in my family, both of them, the younger ones, have admitted to me that they have at one point or another wanted to commit suicide.
Wow.
So again, at 13 and even their age, their brains are not fully developed. I get all that. There's all these different things in emotion, but I am very cautious of that. However, I can't be that overpowering mother that doesn't allow them to live their life.
Yeah.
I just have to make sure they get the right help and have to stay on top of them and really have to just make sure that they are enjoying their life and that this is not the end.
We have about 4 minutes. Shelley, what would you say to the people?
Yes, I just wanted to read a couple of statistics. 10th leading cause of death in U.S., 45,965 Americans die by suicide each year. For every suicide, 25 attempts. Suicide costs the U.S. $69 billion annually. Men die by suicide 3.5 times more often than women, and because of lethal measures, more likely men are likely to use firearms or means that would guarantee that they would be successful in their intent to hurt themselves. And so this goes back to what we have been talking about on this show. We have other mental health professionals in this community that are very verbal about the importance of attending to your emotional disturbances. And don't count yourself out because you hear the word mental illness and you don't think that it applies to you. Any type of emotional disturbance, any level of emotional disturbance, is what we are talking about here when we talk about suicide.
Right.
Because anything that's unattended can only get worse. So get help. Get help for your family members. Try to speak with them. Make referrals on their behalf. Let them say no when the person calls and says, "We received a referral for you." You know, I don't necessarily think that's the best way to do it, to make referrals without speaking with your family members. But anything that would get them to know that they need help. But make sure that you are addressing. I think sometimes we get used to that sick family member, that uncle that doesn't really interact with people, or that niece that's always going to be kind of dark and not really. Don't get used to it. Expose it. There is help. There is help out there. There are way too many anointed professionals in our community that can help. And so, and I think it's also important that we just understand that it can happen to anyone. So whenever you get that thought in your head to pick up the phone and call someone, you know how when you're driving down the highway and you just get this thought, pick up the phone and call them.
And speak life.
Yes.
Speak life into them. Yes. I speak life into my children every single day. That's why I know they're healthy, happy, and wise today. Speak life every single day. When you got to pick up that phone and call somebody because they came on your heart or your spirit, speak life into them. They need it at that moment.
This has been an amazing show. We never, never, never have enough time. I think we may have to do some type of part two to this very soon, because it's an important topic. I just want to encourage everybody just a bit that the Bible says you're fearfully and wonderfully made. He says that he's counted every hair in your head, that he formed you before when you're in your mother's womb. He formed you. He knew you. If you are still breathing and living, there is purpose for your life. There is a something on this earth that you are supposed to do, and we want you to see the fullness of who you are. Please never feel that it's too much. Never feel that it's worth taking your life. You are important. You are valuable. You matter to somebody else, and it's important that you recognize your value. When you know your value, you don't give out discounts. And so we want to make sure that you tune in next week at 10 a.m. to the Fit for Life radio broadcast right here on 98.5 FM The Wire. We're so thankful for you joining us, presented by Frontline Sports Center, sponsored by AmeriGroup, and we're excited for what's to come for you. We're excited for what's to come for Fit for Life, and we thank Shelly for being our co-host. We thank for Christina for coming and sharing your story, being so vulnerable. Make sure you tune in next week, Monday at 10 a.m. to the Fit for Life radio broadcast right here on 98.5 FM The Wire. See you then.